Hello and welcome to another episode of Telling Body Thing. It is me, Catherine Ryan. It's March. Actually, it's nearly Mother's Day, which my family always forgets about because it is not Canadian or American or anywhere really, I think, but the UK Mother's Day. I feel like it's supposed to be in May worldwide and you guys moved it because it's something to do with the Queen. Something to do with the dearly departed Queen. I've had an amazing week. I had a few days at home to I would love to say rest and recuperate, but you know, my family lives here, so it wasn't that. And then I embarked upon a new project that I'm not allowed to announce yet, but suffice to say it's really fun. I did have my first accident on the job. What is happening with me? Last week, I got some type of norovirus food poisoning bug, who knows what happened, and I had to leave work for the very first time and call in sick the next day. And when I eventually turned up to this wonderful job that I was excited about, I cut a piece of my finger off. And the family didn't believe in me that I was smart enough to surgically reattach this bit of finger. It was it was the size of half a Skittle. The end of my finger, the fingerprint side, the opposite side to the nail. I can't say how, but I accidentally chopped that off and it went on the floor. And I think a lot of people would have picked up that piece of finger and put it in the bin or swept it away, but not I. I found it, I grabbed it, I washed it off, don't worry. I disinfected both my finger that was gushing blood and the little piece, and I just sort of fitted it back in like a puzzle piece. And then I thought, why wouldn't this reattach? I feel like it's going to be fine. And then I wrapped it quite tightly. And I waited until I got home, at which point I unwrapped it to properly clean it again and put some polysporin on it, which is like an antiseptic healing cream that we have in Canada and America. I don't think you have polysporin here. You just put pseudochrome on everything, but polysporin is the one. And then I wrapped it again, and Bobby said, "What are you doing? This is never going to work." And I said, "You know, I think the veins, the little capillaries in there are small enough. I have read something online about regeneration of fingertips. As long as it's not your nail bed, the tip of your finger, kind of like a daddy long legs, can regenerate. It can grow back. And so surely if you put the piece that's missing back in, then that can reattach as well." Well, the good news is it's been 2 days, maybe 3 days since that accident. I'm touching the skin that was previously on the floor and I can feel the little tickle from my other finger. And there's a blood supply. I will admit it was the wrong color for about a day, but now I feel like my graft is successful and it is going to attach and just be a normal finger. I put it on social media and loads of people, including wound specialist nurses, have told me that I did a good job or have said that they had the very same experience. Have you ever lost a digit? Because I remember in school, there was a video about losing a tooth. I don't know, like we were so Canadian that we were doing our own dentistry. I don't know where I saw this dental propaganda, but they definitely said, if you knock your tooth out somehow or break your tooth, put it in a glass of milk and bring it as soon as you can to the dentist and they might be able to save your tooth. And that was hammered into it. Like we just heard about that all the time. And it wouldn't have been social media because it didn't exist. Where were they telling us about put your tooth in a bowl of milk? Somewhere. I mean, the video, we would watch actual cassette videos at school about the Constitution, about all kinds of different things. They also always told us about stranger danger. Put your lost tooth in a glass of milk. Don't ever get in a car with a stranger. Don't ever let yourself go to the second location. And when you're babysitting, if someone calls, just say that the parents are home and you don't know the address, whatever, you're visiting. The parents are in the shower. My parents are here. An adult is here. A large adult man is in the building, but just in the shower. On the subject of teeth, I went to the hygienist, which is kind of a mixed bag for me. I love the dentist. I love visiting the hygienist. But the one bit that bothers me at the end is when she, and it's always been a she in my experience, so I won't apologize for that. She gets out her little fake teeth and her toothbrush and teaches an adult how to brush their teeth. That's the humiliating bit. And I think a lot of British people probably stand for it. They sit there and they go, oh yeah, oh yes. So you brush up and down, side to side, yes, and get right in the gum. I see what you're doing there. Yeah, yeah. I don't put up with that bullshit. I say to her every time, don't try it. I know how to brush my teeth. I've chosen not to brush my teeth. I put the kids to sleep and sometimes I myself fall asleep trying to watch the end of Fargo with a mouthful of mini eggs. It's laziness that is stopping me from flossing, not ignorance of the technique. And don't even show it to me. And the hygienist is always like, all right, Catherine, I won't. Don't. You're embarrassing us both. Don't insult my intelligence by showing me how to brush my fucking teeth. I would if I wanted to. But this time, and I have a wonderful hygienist, by the way. I love her. And my teeth were just feeling like never properly clean. And I have been lazy with them. So I went into her and I only saw her a couple months ago, but I go as often as I can. I said, I think, you know, my gums are not as healthy as they should be. Something's up. And she said, have you tried this toothpaste called Biomin? And this is not an ad, guys, but I switched to Biomin. In addition to getting more interdental brushes, it's key that you know what color of interdental brushes you need and you use them in addition to flossing. I am red and pink and I had been using yellow and that was wrong. And she told me, Catherine, you're red and pink, and switch to Biomin. And it is honestly the best toothpaste. So, and I hate to say this because if I'm offered a toothpaste advert one day, I'll have to turn it down on the basis of I already spoke about Biomin and how amazing Biomin is. And I never want to talk myself out of any cash, but I feel too passionately about this to omit or to lie. Biomin has ingredients in it that are actually really good for your teeth, for the health of your gums and your teeth. And I had no clue that like normal toothpaste is sort of like junk food. It's sort of like McDonald's for teeth. And some toothpaste is better than others, but Biomin is top tier. And since I started using it, my teeth just feel clean all the time. But this has taken it to a whole new level. So that's not an ad. I'll use the word fuck, shit, bitch. That's how you know it's not an ad. They'd never let me swear in an ad in a fucking, oh my gosh, Fred. I was showing this off to Miriam, which I shouldn't have done. Our babysitter Miriam hates kids swearing. She doesn't find it funny at all, which is fair. I mean, it isn't great to encourage kids to swear, but Fred definitely learns it from Violet and Bobby, and I won't even place myself in that because I do not swear in front of the kids. I probably will one day, but I'm just, maybe I do a bit, but not as much as Bobby and Violet. And so Fred sometimes says piss. Last night he had a nightmare about a wind blower. Like, Fred is a very specific man and I love him so much. And if you watched our family series, Parental Guidance, Fred has changed so much even from that time. He's like a whole different boy to the boy that he was in that series. He had just turned two. Now he's just over 2.5 and he's so funny and he's really musical and he loves dancing and he's friends with lots of girls at nursery now and he's just so sweet and soft and all this toxic masculinity that I worried about was just a phase and he's just so funny, really funny, really smart. He can count and he knows when to stop counting. One of my mom's criticisms of me at 18 months or 21 months is that I would count, but I'd go 1, 2, 3, 4, and I never knew when to stop counting. Fred is mindfully counting. He's actually counting things and he knows when to stop. He can say anything. I met someone the other day who was like, oh, is Fred talking? I was like, are you joking? Fred just talks the way I talk. Like, he just speaks like a teenager now. And he woke up at 4 a.m. and probably 2 a.m. and midnight last night. Oh, Amy Schumer, who I know is now a controversial political figure, but I love Amy Schumer, and she spoke about a sleep specialist that she had for her son, who I think is 4. And I went onto this woman's page. Hurry and check Amy Schumer's Insta page if you haven't already. I think it's an organic post about the sleep specialist. I might look into it because I don't think she leaves kids to cry. She deals with more mature children, like up to 9 years old, and gets them, according to her, sleeping 10 to 12 hours with no wake-ups, falling asleep on their own. And when the time is right, I would love to do that with my kids because I still haven't slept through the night since they were alive. But last night, Fred woke up for good at 4, and he's like, Mom, he doesn't cry anymore. He's just like, Mama, should we go downstairs? I laid down next to him. I fell asleep for about 30 minutes. I don't think he did. I think he stayed awake the whole time, but he was quiet. He was just like patiently waiting for the sun. And he was just glad to know that I was next to him and I was having sort of a conversation with him. And then when we finally come downstairs and Bobby's awake, he's like, Dad, I had a dream last night. And I said, well, if he had a bad dream, why didn't he cry? And Bobby's like, well, you know, I know how Fred's mind works. He just had the dream and he was thinking a lot about the dream, wondering what the hell is going on. And we said, what was your dream about Fred? And Fred isn't scared of the normal things that kids are scared of, like monsters or this or that. He hates the wind. He hates certain textures. Like, he won't wear wool. And I tried to put these fluffy pants on him today. He wouldn't wear those trousers. Like, they're just things he doesn't like. And the wind is a big one. And he's like, oh, the wind blower. Bobby said, what was it? He goes, the man had a wind blower. And I was trying to get away from the wind. And Miriam had Fena in her arms. And there was just this man with the wind blower. And then he screwed his face up and he goes, that fucking wind blower. And Bobby and I were like, huh? You know what it's like when your toddler for the first time uses swearing, like big swearing in the right context as well. I was just like, what did you say, Fred? And he's like, the fucking wind blower. And then he said, the wind fucking blower. And I was like, Jesus, where is he getting that from? And I know it's not me because it can't be me. I enunciate swear words. So if I'm going to use the word, I say fucking. If he'd sounded like Samantha Jones with a martini in his hand being like, girls, that fucking wind blower, then it would have been me. But I'm innocent. What do you think about this Ambani family? I think the dad is the richest guy ever in the world. He's worth billions. And his son just had a pre-wedding party in India that saw the likes of Rihanna performing. Bill Gates was in attendance. Ivana Trump. The Zuckerbergs were there. And his daughter was married a couple years before. Beyoncé performed at her pre-wedding party. This isn't even the wedding. This is a pre-wedding party. Jeff Leatham did the flowers. That's my favorite florist in the world. And when you look at these images online, I mean, they are the most grandiose flowers. The mother of the groom-to-be wore a 6.5 million pound diamond ring. The bride-to-be wore a gown that was, I think, similar to the Versace one that Blake Lively wore to the Met Gala. I mean, no expense was spared. They made something like 225 different meals. There was a 9-page dress code. They weren't fucking about. This wedding, pre-wedding party, sorry, cost 120 million pounds. And the daughter's pre-wedding party a few years ago cost 100 million pounds, which I suppose is not a lot when you are worth 100 billion pounds. But the reason people are shaking their heads is obviously the world is on fire. And this event over 3 days took place amongst, you know, right next to where people are really struggling the most just to make ends meet. So it's interesting to see that conspicuous consumption is back in a big way, because there have always been very, very wealthy people, but they sort of, for a time, just out of politeness for what was going on in the world, seemed to be a little stealth about their wealth, hidden it a bit. They weren't splashing out. And this family, in fairness to them, like, they've always splashed out. This is nothing new for them. They live in like a 27-floor tower that cost £1 billion. The groom-to-be has a 1 million pound watch, and they have supercars. They have 3 helipads. Like, they're the richest family, I think, in the world. And I don't even know why. What does this dad do again? Like, energy? Okay, it says on Mukesh Ambani's Wikipedia. And you know what? This event certainly has put the family on the mainstream map. I'm sure they're very, very famous in India and very famous in certain circles, but now everyone knows who they are. The video of Rihanna's performance, which cost like $9 million, that went viral. All of a sudden, news outlets were interested. Then they see the Zuckerbergs and Bill Gates are there, and everyone's like, huh? And now I feel like there isn't anyone who's not watching this Ambani shit go down. So the dad is an Indian billionaire businessman. He's the chairman and managing director of Reliance Industries, India's most valuable company by market value, with an estimated net worth of $117.8 billion. According to Forbes, as of March 2024, he is the richest person in all of Asia and 9th richest in the world. Sometimes characterized as a plutocrat, he has attracted both fame and notoriety for reports of market manipulation, political corruption, cronyism, and exploitation. Well, shit. Let me tell you, I've got nothing bad to say about this man. He's gorgeous, handsome. The Ambanis, I wish you health, wealth, happiness, success, and love in your lives. You know what the real wedding needs is maybe a compere or a commère, which I found out is the name for a female compère, because père, patriarchy, dad, commère is literally the name. That's not just me being a feminist. It's the real name. If you have a woman MC, they should have me there. They have a cool down room that has artificial snow in their palace. So presumably they've heard of Canada. They would like me to come. I'm not messing with the richest of the rich. No way. And a lot of people will say, well, why don't they give their money to charity? They could end world hunger. They could do this. They could do that. Those are all fair points. But at least they're not hoarding that money. I mean, surely when the catering bill alone is 20 million pounds, you're employing a lot of people in that city and elsewhere to work at the wedding, to cook food for the wedding. You're employing the farmers. The more money they spend, at least they're putting it back into the economy. Is that a thing? I would rather that than they funnel it all to islands and put it in a foundation and like pay Rihanna. What you owe her? Pay her $9 million to come dance around at your wedding with no shoes on. Go ahead. They had loads of Bollywood stars there too. I mean, it was an amazing, amazing, amazing event. I gotta get myself on this guest list. Uh-oh, Bradley Cooper's nude attitude. Oscar nominee Bradley Cooper caused a pearl clutch moment felt around the world recently during an appearance on Dax Shepard's podcast, The Armchair Expert, when the topic of familial nudity came up. After Dax revealed that the Shepard-Bell family was, quote, naked all the time with each other, Cooper chimed in saying, me too. Not with my mom, but with my dad. My dad was always nude. I always took nude showers with my dad. This simultaneously shocked and appalled 90% of the internet, whilst arousing 10%. Bradley Cooper is a hunk who used to be a little boy, like most hunks. And in parental guidance, I did visit a naturist family who believe in the freedom of expression, of being naked all the time. They even had kids at these resorts. Nudity is not sexual. I mean, I live here in the UK. I have a very European attitude toward nudity. But I will say that in Canada, and especially America, they are far more puritanical about the whole thing. I remember back when Donald Trump, who's going to feature in our lives once again, in the presidential race soon. I don't even know how he is allowed to run because didn't he get found guilty of these crimes? And now he's allowed to run against Joe Biden in the autumn election. Anyway, I'm mostly out of American politics now and I'm glad for that. But I remember during his initial race for president, all of the videos came out, the pussy grabbing chat and accusations of sexual misconduct. And the people who were defending Donald Trump used Beyonce as an example at the time. And they said, well, how is this sexual video of her different from Donald Trump talking about grabbing pussy? Because Americans, well, those Americans anyway, had confused sexuality with sexual abuse and sensuality with lack of consent. And it was wild to watch them in real time be like, seriously asking, what about Beyonce shaking her ass? How's that different from grabbing a woman without her consent by the pussy and kissing her as a celebrity? What's the difference there? They don't know. Because for a lot of Americans, sex has been vilified to the point that it's as bad as sexual assault. You know, they're like, well, any sex, all sex, bad and dirty. No, 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 no sex. So presumably nudity, they view it the same way. And this is why they rally against drag brunches and all kinds of other things. This is where all the confusion comes from, because they're like, all naked, all sex, bad. All talk of gender must be talk of sex. All gay must be sex. Drag is sex. It's like, no, it isn't. It's different. And Bradley Cooper having a shower with his dad is not sexual. I don't think it's inappropriate to have your kids see you naked and vice versa. There comes an age where naturally your children will develop like feelings of, I don't know if whether to call it shame, but just like body autonomy. And they're like, ma, I just don't want to get my dick out anymore. But the kids run around naked. I mean, this family's naked from the waist down all the time, the younger ones. And I don't really walk around naked, but that's just because I'm cold. And Bobby certainly is not one of these dick-swinging guys who likes to walk around naked. He grew up with a single mom and three sisters, Bobby's always covered up. We don't bathe with the kids. We bathe them together, though. And I don't think I would shower with my child. I have showered with Fena in my arms, actually. But I don't know that I would shower as a man standing with a little boy, because then, like, your dick or balls or ass is right in his face. And at least when you're a woman, all your bits are, like, invisible. But I still don't. I don't think I would shower stood next to a child, because, like, it's just not a great height. But I know many families that do. I don't have a problem with it. And you know, Bradley Cooper is a lovely gentleman who had a close relationship with his dad. They obviously were very open. They were naked in the shower together sometimes, and hopefully they had deep chats too. And do you know what parenting like that fosters? Emotionally accessible men like Jason Kelce, my favorite football player. King of comfort and my personal style icon, Jason Kelce, brother of Travis, the future brother-in-law of Taylor, announced his retirement in an emotional roller coaster of a press conference earlier this week. The entire Kelce family was present, watching as the burly, bearded, typically wisecracking Jason broke down in tears multiple times at the podium on national television. Cameras panned the room, and they caught Travis wiping away tears under his sunglasses, along with their parents, Donna and Ed, dabbing tissues at their faces. The media is acting like this is the first time someone with a beard has ever cried. Again, we're talking about American football, and maybe we're not used to big, burly men who fight and who tackle and who are funny have such immediate access to their emotions. But I feel like these brothers are great. I feel like Donna and Ed Kelce did a great job with their sons, because their sons are able to be these like tough alpha males, quarterbacks, defense. I don't know the position Jason Kelce plays. I should. He's my absolute favorite player on account of his tracksuits. But these are men who seem to be very loyal, good dads. I mean, I know I'm only seeing part of it. But the way that Jason Kelce appears to love his wife, he met his wife. Why do I know so much about this family? Like, I don't even know. I know more about the Kelces than I know about Taylor Swift. Her name's honestly going to be something like Kelce Kelce or like Keegan Kelce. I don't know. But they met on a dating app and she showed her friends and went, no, this isn't Jason Kelce, like the actual professional football player Jason Kelce, is it? Am I being catfished? And she went to the bar. And Jason got so drunk, he fell asleep at the bar. And she wasn't your typical wag. Like, she's a real football fan, nice, sporty, wholesome looking girl too. And he was like, please give me another chance. And she did. And now they have beautiful children and a lovely life. And they seem to be a true example of a great married couple. And I appreciate parents raising their boys this way. And I really do join my daughter Violet in hoping that Travis Kelce is always good to Taylor, whatever happens in their relationship, that he doesn't feature in a song. But I do wonder what the press coverage would have been if a female athlete had retired, Megan Rapinoe, for example, and sobbed to that extent.
And they deserve everything, so I'm really grateful for them.
So there's Serena Williams crying too. I didn't really see Serena Williams criticized for crying. Like, it doesn't stick out in my mind as people being like, Serena Williams cries too much. But there was loads of coverage about Jason Kelce crying too. So maybe the days of double standards are ending. Women cry when they retire, men cry when they retire, and it's all good. And I would love to see more women and men and boys wearing their emotions on their sleeves, or in this case, shoulder pads. Princess Kate has been spotted. We've all been looking out for her. We've all been wishing her well. We've all been wondering about her. It doesn't necessarily look like the Kate Middleton we know, but we know that she's been unwell. The photo, strangely, looking at it now, if you haven't seen it on the TMZ or Daily Mail, wherever you get your celeb news, she bears a striking resemblance to another high-profile wife absorbed into a secretive elite society, Katie Holmes. Look at the picture very carefully and tell me she doesn't look like Katie Holmes. But anyway, it looks like Camilla cannot Saltburn Buckingham Palace just yet, because Princess Kate is no longer missing. Banksy's back. She's alive and well, and she was driving around alongside her mom, Carol, outside Windsor Castle without security detail. Is she crying in that photo? I don't know. I just feel like it's very easy to look at someone like Kate Middleton and say, oh, people are struggling. She has such a charmed life. She wears beautiful designer gowns. She lives in a palace. She's princess. She's a three wonderful, healthy kids. But I don't know how many decisions of your own you get to make in that position and how long it would take for a life like that to drive me absolutely up the wall. And I feel like in the early days of Britney Spears crying at the side of the road and the paparazzi descending on her in Los Angeles and being like, Britney, what's wrong? I was a young woman with a car, a 1993 Jeep Tracker, to be exact, GMC Tracker. And I thought, if I was there, I would drive up and I'd be like, get in, Britney. And my friends and I would like look after Britney, and we wouldn't want anything from her. We wouldn't exploit her. We just like her because she was instrumental in our upbringing and we loved her music so much that we'd like be a real friend to Britney. I wanted to be Britney's real friend and help. And I feel like, you know, Kate Middleton, I hope, has real friends like that around her who are looking out for whatever is going on. And I hate even talking about it because I don't want to get in bad with the palace or the Amanis. Can some like poor people do something for me to talk about? Okay. It seems that breakout star of Queer Eye and seemingly real-life non-binary pixie Jonathan Van Ness has been outed by production sources as a monster, a nightmare, and a, quote, demeaning person, according to a damning behind-the-scenes expose by Rolling Stone. I'm confused about this because if Rolling Stone are able to legally print it, then there must be some basis for this expose. I'm just talking legally, presumably. I don't know this for a fact. It's all alleged. Every once in a while, we like to take a celebrity who's beloved, like Ellen DeGeneres, and tear them down. Be like, actually, they're mean. James Corden, everyone loves him. No, actually, apparently, he sent back an order at an Italian restaurant. You know, we do this elevating and then discarding. It's really toxic way of a celebrity news cycle. And I just am confused because Jonathan Van Ness, they're friends with really cool girls that I know who I don't think would be friends with a monster. But then again, sometimes you show one side of you to the people that you admire and you show another side of you to runners, production assistants, cast, and crew. But according to this, he didn't even get on with his own cast. Quote, there's a real emotion of fear around JVN when they get angry. It's almost like a cartoon where it oozes out of Jonathan. One source who worked with Jonathan told the publication it's intense and scary. Another production source called the reality star a yeller and said that they would explode weekly, and it didn't stop with lowly production lackeys. If you've ever wondered why the Fab Five would rarely appear in scenes together, it's because the other four refused to work with Jonathan Van Ness. Like a Kim Cattrall situation. I can't confirm or deny this. There's a girl I could text and be like, what's this article? Is Jonathan toxic? But she would say no. And I think she'd also be offended that I asked her. So I will just say that usually where there's smoke, there's fire. I have never heard of a situation where someone is branded kind of a dick and they've not been a dick. I can think of one example of a lady actually who's been a bit of a dick to me a couple times. Not too badly. She didn't mean to, but it's almost like she let her mask slip a few times. And I don't think that she's a bad person or a yeller or an angry person. I think she has anxiety that reads as being an asshole sometimes. And she has snapped at a few people, snapped at me once, it's hard to say. But then she's been so wonderful and generous so many more times than that. So it is possible that someone like Ellen DeGeneres, for example, and I defended her when all those rumors came out, and I'm going to defend Jonathan Van Ness as well, is that it is possible that people are always navigating neurodiversity, like something going on in their own lives, where they have nothing left. Steve Harvey, I also defended. It seems like I just defend assholes, but Steve Harvey wrote a letter to his staff saying, like, please don't just come in and ask me things. Knock on my door. I need my personal time to rest and recuperate. And I don't want to hear this. And I don't want to hear about that. And you need to write me a letter and make an appointment with me if you want to talk to me. I defended him as well, because at the end of the day, a lot of people's jobs are riding on Ellen DeGeneres, Jonathan Van Ness, Steve Harvey, arriving on set, firing all cylinders, really funny, really rested, really thoughtful. And if they're using up all their energy during the day in like production meetings and people wasting their time, you know, some of that stuff's very necessary, but some of it's not. And people struggle to communicate their boundaries properly, and sometimes their anxiety might leak out and they snap at someone and they didn't mean to. But I would expect that an apology be made afterwards. I was filming with a young woman the other day who, in reference to me being like a predator catcher, said, yeah, I remember you always speak up for people. You always have done that. You spoke up for me when someone was being racist on set 10 years ago. And I was like, I did? She goes, yeah, you told him to leave me alone and fuck off. And I was like, 10 years ago I did that? She's like, yes, you did. And I didn't even remember doing so. So he was using the P word and saying to her, like, wow, you got really far being a P girl, which I would have found to be super offensive. And I'm glad that me from 10 years ago with like no authority and no power was like, don't call that girl the P word and go fuck yourself. Apparently that's what I did. So I don't expect any rumors to come out about me. But if they do, that would be spicy for my brand. Anyway, I hope someone like Catherine Ryan comes to my defense. I'll be the new Steve Harvey. Bring it on. Oh, Andrew Johnston, my friend, my collaborator, wonderful comedian, Mandrew Bronston on Instagram. He wants you to know that the countdown is on for the first date of the Girls Aloud reunion tour. Although it won't be the same without Sarah Harding, RIP. Andrew just saw five members of S Club, minus Paul, again, RIP, and Hannah, who has had a mysterious rift. He saw them on the final night of their Good Times tour in LA, and it was one of the most joyous evenings of Andrew's life. They were incredible. Highly recommend the podcast listeners of Telling Everybody Everything not to miss Girls Aloud. Seize these reunion moments. Let's seize the moment now to hear from our sponsors. And when we come back, I will get into the emails, the dirty, dirty deeds, the dilemmas, and the wonderful, wholesome advice that you have for other listeners when we come back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let me just start by saying, the hell? Dear Catherine, I'm a 20-year-old gay man, and I recently started seeing a therapist for the first time. He was also a gay man, maybe 50. In my second session, he said to me, I'm just gonna say it. You're beautiful. This really troubled me, and I brought it up with him the next session, and he talked about why I was uncomfortable but didn't apologize. I carried on with him, but after the fifth session, decided to end it. I sent him an email detailing why, including that he had said to me that he was proud of me after I had a difficult conversation with my mom. He replied saying we could talk about this in a session, but again, he never apologized, and I never replied to him again. Calling me beautiful was inappropriate, but what do you think about the fact he said he was proud of me? It felt it brought about a strange dynamic. Is this normal for a therapist? Stay fresh. Well, I don't think it's normal for a therapist to tell you you're beautiful. It could be. This sounds like it's not, because you're a 20-year-old gay man. He's a 50-year-old gay man. You know this about each other. It definitely feels like he is embodying a daddy role with all the evidence put together. I'm proud of you. You're beautiful. You know what I mean? I'm trying to think about Pam and what she said to me in the past. I'm sure she said she's proud of me, but she has said it in a way like, I'm proud of you. Is that okay to say? I am proud of you. But Pam and I don't have a dynamic where she could be my daddy, you know? So I think it's so difficult to make a list of things that therapists should or shouldn't say, because there is nuance and every relationship's different. But this is a new therapist. You only saw him 5 times. You made it clear that you were uncomfortable with this kind of compliments and language, and he didn't apologize. But and then, like, therapists confuse me, because I think sometimes they're trying to get something out of you in an interesting way. Like, I had a therapist when I was a teenager. And when I was a teenager, I struggled with self-confidence, and rightly so. I was a freak. And I went in, and she said to me one day, "Oh, I'm glad that you didn't cross paths with my last client. My last client went to your school, and she just left. And I asked her, like, what would you want to be? Like, what would be the ideal, you know, thing or person that you could be?" And she said to me, "I want to be Catherine Ryan." And you wouldn't believe that there are people whose greatest dream is to be like you, and you don't love yourself, but this girl, all she wanted was to be like you. And even as a 15-year-old in that moment, I was like, is that bullshit? Are you saying that to me to see how I react? Or did a girl really come in here and say she wanted to be me? It's probably the latter. But do you know what I'm saying? So he could be doing some secret spell to see how you feel about daddies and how you respond. He could be teaching you how to put boundaries up. But I don't think he's probably that intelligent. I think you just need a new therapist. And you know what? You can take something positive away from this. Like, I don't know why you went to therapy, or just for, you know, empowering yourself and becoming a better person, a better version of yourself. Or if you had issues with partners and seeking out daddies. And I feel like you have behaved really well. Regardless of how this therapist has behaved, you put up really clear boundaries. The person violating your boundaries didn't respond correctly, and then you cut them off. So in a roundabout way, job well done, therapist. This is a very triggering email. And again, I am not blaming any restaurant for what happened last week. It could have been norovirus. It could have been anything. I feel that I'm very fastidious with hand washing hygiene, but maybe I was going to different venues. I was shaking different hands. Like, I might have touched something. But this person is talking about lettuce specifically. She says, "Catherine, it was 100% the salad. Washed and unwashed leaves can cause both issues. If washed and left, bacteria can start to grow if left in unsuitable conditions. It is very fragile and has to be managed with the utmost care. And the bacteria can affect people's guts in different ways based on their tolerance and eating habits. Due to your health issues and diet, your stomach may be more sensitive by comparison to others. I studied food safety as part of my course at Le Cordon Bleu, and salad is most certainly the culprit. I spent my 40th birthday hugging the toilet after eating a salad the night before. I was devastated. I honestly thought that I was going to pass due to the fever it triggered. Thankfully, I was fully reimbursed for my stay. Once again, the salad strikes. Who never we could be taken down by a lettuce leaf." Yeah, lettuce is the number one thing that makes you sick. And like, if you are listening and you're a restaurant that I have accused or not accused, I've not directly accused you. I don't want to think it's you. And I've already been back to that establishment since. Did I eat lettuce? No. If you are serving your family or yourself, or you work in a restaurant, just know that lettuce is number one on the food hygiene safety list. It causes the most problems. So this is important to know, washed or unwashed. Don't leave it laying around. It's moist. I know people don't like that word. It can grow bacteria. And you know what? I don't want to discourage people from eating salads, because I love a salad. Salads are great for you, but be careful with them. Ooh, here's some step-parenting dilemma. "Catherine, I was hoping you could talk on your podcast about your opinions on how to best add a new boyfriend into the family." I'd say historically, don't. "I'm at a crossroads. I don't want to make the wrong decision that will impact my daughter negatively. I'm a single parent to a sassy and independent 8-year-old who operates on 100% energy all day long. She's amazing. I admire her unshakable confidence. I left her dad when she was a baby. They have a good, distant relationship now, and they phone often and see each other a few times a year. This is exactly the same as my situation. It's been mentioned to me by family members and ex-friends that she lacks discipline and a male role model, and that this is a problem. I initially thought her extroverted personality was a gift. I took it as a compliment from people who said she might grow up to be spoiled. But the mom guilt does get to me sometimes, because the whole burden of raising this human is on me. I think that, if I could stop you there, my experience with Violet was similar. There were never any people or friends or family members in my life who said she was spoiled, ever, because Violet is a unique form of spoiled. Like, she gets everything she wants, but she doesn't really have to ask for it, and she doesn't have tantrums, and she's not rude. And this is how Violet's got me by the balls. If Violet's not rude to me, I don't see a reason to ever say no to her. And so Violet is lovely and charming and engaging with me, and like, why would I say no to her unless she exhibits bad behavior? She shares, she's like, I'm going back to when she was a kid. She just wasn't bad. She didn't have exactly the exuberant energy that you're saying that your daughter has. I think that single mothers and daughters have a really unique relationship, and boyfriends in the past would describe that relationship as codependent. I had a boyfriend who was like, you're codependent with your child. And she was 3. And I was like, yeah, she literally couldn't survive in the wild without me. Like, and I really resented him for saying that. But I kept boyfriends at a distance from her. So they were never involved in her upbringing or her discipline, like, ever. And they were stupid, but not so stupid that they would criticize my parenting or they get the chop. I think it's hard for people to understand the relationship that you have as a single mom with your daughter. So I wouldn't take any of that criticism too personally. Anyway, fast forward to now. I've been dating my boyfriend for nearly 2 years. Due to our financial situation and the housing crisis, it would make perfect sense to move in together in the next few months when his tenancy finishes. The main problem is my boyfriend and my daughter clash. If he tells her to do something, she argues and challenges him on it frequently, which causes a lot of stress for us all. She sometimes complains when I tell her he's coming round. This is not 100% of the time, but it's a lot, and I find myself stuck in the middle trying to appease both. I feel she's resisting a new authority figure and probably doesn't want the status quo of what we have to change. To be honest, I'm not sure I want to let go of our time together being just us. I'm also discovering I'm absolutely useless at co-parenting. Having only functioned as a single parent, the idea of two adults being in charge at once is baffling. I mean, I feel for this guy because he's been with you since your daughter was 6. And if you're taking a relationship to the next level and moving in together, he is going to be a co-parent, and he feels that he should exercise authority and that he deserves the same respect as you. But I mean, it's tough for stepdads. He's not going to get it. Bobby did not take that approach when he moved in. And the distinction, I think, between what's going on with you and what was going on with me is because Violet was 9, so she was the same age. I moved Bobby in quite quickly, but we were married. You know, it was like, this is going to be the man that I'm married to and I have a family with, and you're going to have brothers and sisters, and like, this is it. And Bobby was very realistic about what that would mean for Violet, and he didn't discipline her. If you're going to move in with this guy, and right now for me, there are some like gut instinct red flags that are telling me not to move in with this guy. A financial crisis is not really a reason to move someone into your daughter's life. If you've been with this guy for 2 years and you're only thinking about getting serious now, he's probably not the right guy. Do you know what I mean? It took 2 years to convince yourself. And I appreciate keeping someone at arm's length from your daughter, but she is throwing up all the signs that she doesn't like this guy. And Violet didn't do that with Bobby. Like, she sort of protested a little in the beginning, like, what? You have a boyfriend? But then instantly she liked him and she saw the benefits of having him around. And if your daughter is arguing with this guy already and he doesn't even live with you, like, once he's in, it's hard to get him out. So I might go to therapy with my daughter, or like, really think hard about it. Is what you're doing going to be forever? Because it is not worth damaging your daughter at all and damaging her relationship with you. Like, you're the person that she looks to keep her safe. And if she doesn't like this guy, I wonder about why. And if he is throwing his authority around, like, a good leader doesn't need to push. A good leader leads by example and welcomes people by just being an attractive leader. Like, your daughter should want to follow him and be like, oh, I really like this guy, and he comes in gentle and he gets the vibe with me and my mom. Like, if your partner doesn't get it, I don't think he's ever going to get it. And once he's in the house, he's going to be more and more frustrated with her. And couldn't you just, like, have an OnlyFans account to make the extra cash instead of inviting a guy around because of a financial crisis? You know what I mean? Because you need to recognize the difference between your daughter resisting any change and your daughter resisting this guy. I don't feel like it sounds like he gets it. You go on. I've dated one other person between her dad and my current boyfriend, which ended disastrously, suddenly, with him cheating and being generally a bit of a dick. So your daughter's also protecting you. I kept a lot of that hidden from her, but obviously she knew it was a sad time. Yeah, they're smart. So I know the situation that I'm in now, she's probably just trying to protect me, which breaks my heart even more. I would choose my daughter's happiness over my relationship in a heartbeat. I would choose my daughter's happiness over my relationship in a heartbeat. Ugh. But wouldn't the additional parental figure be good for her as she gets older? And a dual income household sounds amazing for us both too. I would be able to give her so much more. Oh, how do I know that these are just teething troubles? Might I end up damaging my relationship with my daughter if I don't break it off? And how long did it take for Violet to approve of Bobby? It was the opposite with Violet. She didn't like him at first, really liked him. And now that she's a teenager, she's like, hey, I want to be able to do more. And you are stricter than my mom. And I don't like that. You will never know is my answer. I will never know if I made the right decision for Violet by changing our status quo, because she has brothers and sisters now, brother and sister now, and she has Bobby. And I think that he adds positivity to her life in so many ways. But I'll have to wait till she's 25 and looks back and says, you ruined what we had. And I just don't know yet. So sometimes there's no perfect answer. You are going to have to be really shrewd with yourself and look at all of the evidence that you have in front of you and trust your gut. Like, is this the right guy for you? And cheating isn't the only thing a guy can do wrong. You and I are so alike. And you're going to have to take that gamble, because you will not know if it was the right decision for about a decade. I kind of feel like it's not, for some reason. I feel like it's not. Not unless and until this guy understands that he needs to come into your daughter's life as a friend first. And once they've established trust and a good friendship, and she can see that he treats you well, and she can see that he's not trying to destroy her life, only then can he implement some discipline, but in a kind and boundaried way. This is from someone who describes herself as an older listener. She's probably like 41. I'm old. I'm old, Catherine. All right. My husband has been suffering with severe anxiety for a year. He is a kind, patient, and wonderful man, but has hit a rock, and at times he's experienced suicidal thoughts. I'm exhausted, lost, and struggling to cope with a life that has no joy. The energy in our home is so low, and I'm questioning how we move forward. It feels that my husband and I are so detached from one another, and we are opposite in all that we believe, something which in the past has actually served our relationship well, but now doesn't. I'm reaching out, I don't know, or maybe I'm just trying to get my emotions on electronic paper. We have tried therapy and had some support from our local health service, but nothing seems to be working. I stumble from feelings of hope and hopelessness. I know that I often provide unhealthy emotional support to my husband, veering from tenderness to understanding to impatience and intolerance. As I read this back, I know it's rather a collective form of waffle and woe. Maybe you could just offer some thoughtful and or non-nonsense guidance, because I so often listen to your podcast. It gives me a little hope in navigating this staggeringly difficult time of my life. I think the trouble is that I'm trying to think in my head about an image of you molding something out of clay, but the clay is milk. I don't know how to describe that. Like, it won't take form because it's just milk in your hands and it keeps washing through your fingers. I know that it is impossible for you to be in a relationship of one with this man. He's not present, and his mental health makes it really difficult for you to use all the tools that previously worked in spicing up your partnership and keeping you connected. It's not working right now because you're molding clay that's milk. Does that make any sense to anyone? and you're trying to make a sculpture and it's too viscous. It's liquid in your hands. So it's difficult for men, especially older men. I assume you're not with a toy boy and he's also old. I think men have different times in their life that statistically present a mental health crisis. And I think the biggest one is like 21. 21-year-old men have this thing that their brain graduates from one type of man to another, and a lot of them don't make it out alive. And that is a shame. And then again, later in life, they have maybe another identity crisis, maybe a testosterone dip, maybe something chemical goes on with them, and they have empty nest syndrome, but in a different way, and they lose their virality. Is that the right word? Like, but in a different way. And they go, well, who am I? I'm turning into an old man. And maybe their father dies and they're like, what is this? And they have another crisis of confidence, or just, as you describe, a dip in mental health. And you've been to therapy together. You've done couples therapy and it hasn't worked. You've sought help from your local health service. That doesn't work. It's really difficult with a man of that era if he's not willing to accept that he might need really intensive therapy or medication or, you know, something to make him happy in the way that you remember him being. And I hate to use the word happy when it comes to mental health. I know it's a lot more complicated than that, but you are up against him. This is not a problem with you. Like, couples therapy won't do it, because it's not that you have a communication breakdown. It's that he is in the middle of a mental health crisis and he needs to fix that. So I don't know how you can encourage him to do so. You deserve your own happiness, and you don't want to be, you know, you don't want all your life wound up in someone who won't help themselves. And I know he's tried. It's good that he's gone with you. But menopause is crazy too. Like, there are women in my life who are like, I thought I was crazy and I just had menopause. So hopefully you can get on some hormone replacement therapy if that's, you know, it doesn't work for everyone and you have to experiment with different gels and creams and pills, but oh my God, like trying to carry your whole marriage on your back whilst you're dealing with menopause too. It's like women really do a lot of the mental load and emotional labor and fixing of everyone, but you might not necessarily be able to fix him. He's got to do it from within. He's got to help himself. Does he have friends? Like, maybe you could suggest a retreat with his friends. Do you have the language to say to him, like, I get frustrated sometimes, but ultimately I love you. I want to help you. And I think that it's very normal to be feeling the way that you're feeling, and you can get help and you can be better. I'm so sorry that you're going through this. And it doesn't mean that the rest of your life is going to be like this. And if this doesn't get better, like, maybe you will just need to part ways eventually, because it seems callous when you talk about vows and you're like, oh, I'm with you in sickness and health, and mental health counts as sickness and health. And if he's sick, you know, like, you wouldn't necessarily leave your husband with cancer, but cancer's not contagious in the way that this mental health crisis could be contagious. You need to have some firm boundaries for yourself and understand, like, what your own limit is to dealing with this, because you can only take so much before you get sick too. And you don't want to live the rest of your life like this. And also, a lot of people divorce at this time of life because you're not ready just to be miserable forever. So hopefully he can help himself. And I think that he needs to get honest with himself, and he needs his own therapy independent of the joint therapy that you've tried. And don't beat yourself up if you have to leave him. Oh no, oh no, oh no, not another dad with a baby girlfriend. Maybe what your husband needs is a baby girlfriend, because it seems like a lot of them are doing this. God damn it. Catherine, what? I expect you might tell me to grow the fuck up. Why would I say that to you? But I thirstily lap up your thoughts on men dating much younger women, and I seek your wisdom. I'm 28. My 60-year-old dad is with a young 39-year-old. I find this situation gross, but am I being a dick? How can I hang out with them without gagging? She's not that young. She's older than you. I was really worried that you were going to be like, I'm 28 and my dad's with a 19, 20-year-old. My dad, Wayne Lineker, is with like a hot Ibiza 25-year-old babe. 39 is younger than your dad, yeah. But 39 is nearly 40, and This woman has at least lived a life. You know what I mean? She's not in college. Let's hear more. Tale as old as time. This relationship started 4.5 years ago when my dad, then 56, okay, very suddenly left my fun and stunning mom, 54, for this 35-year-old woman at work. I had long thought my parents should separate due to incompatibilities in their relationship. She is audacious and unconventional, and he likes beige food and World War II. And I supported their divorce. All I ask is for my dad to choose a partner older than Beyonce. That's all any of us want for our dads. Ideally, not be a dick about it too, which he absolutely was, and that's another story. Lots of people say my dad's relationship is fine because his girlfriend is clearly a mature adult, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I get that she's not vulnerable. Big round of applause for daddy. You're really funny. I really like you. But I can't help disrespect my dad for not wanting to be with a stunning, sexy, sophisticated woman his own age. It makes me think that he does not value older women. My dad wants to normalize our relationship after a lot of turbulence. Before all of this, we used to be close, but hanging out with the two of them makes me feel slimy because there is a generational divide. So how should I approach this? How can I pretend that my dad is a mature adult role model when he clearly can't keep up with women his own age? Is it unreasonable not to want to spend time with her? This would help me forget about how he's choosing to surround himself with a 39-year-old woman and not a beautiful, experienced, sophisticated one like my mom. Ultimately, nothing's going to change the fact that I think it's embarrassing for him that he can't find a peer to bang him. I suspect he's intimidated by women over 50. She's offended by my attitude. Any reflections are desperately welcome. Your podcast has soothed so much hurt and pain and turned it to empowerment, and your wit and wisdom over the past years have done the same, so thank you for that public service. P.S. You're going to love this P.S. My mom is now having the best sex of her life in a steamy situationship with an incredibly beautiful and apparently very well-endowed man, and I couldn't be happier for her. He is also 6 years younger, but I can live with that. Why is your mom telling you about his penis? Holy shit, this family. Your parents have done a great job in raising you. Like, you're really funny. And maybe it's not only this woman's age that's putting you off. Like, she would have to be amazing to match your level of wit. And you say your mom's really funny and your mom's obviously talking to you about her situationship and his dick. I mean, how big is it? Pete Davidson, the comedian, American comedian, allegedly has a 10-inch penis. And by metric terms, that's 25 centimeters. That's a quarter meter dick. It's the size of a small owl. And that's too much for me. I don't think I would want my mom getting cystitis like that. But if she's enjoying herself. So they've both done, I guess, the stereotypical rebound of like your dad's gone 20 years younger and your mom's with someone who has a huge dick and having great sex. So these are like both the nightmare for the other person, you know, like a woman, I think, always wonders. I mean, maybe your mom doesn't give a shit, but she goes, oh, is that next woman going to be hotter and younger? And then the man goes, I hope he doesn't have a bigger dick than me. That's really all men, I think, care about. Wouldn't care about the age, nothing. Okay, so you acknowledge that this woman's not a teenager, and that's fine, but you don't like that you feel like your dad's value has been diminished in your eyes, and presumably you looked up to him before, and he acted like a dick in this split, and he moved on quickly, and he moved on with someone younger. And so for you, I think the issue is you're having to accept that your dad is maybe not this role model that you've idolized. He's, you know, he's not this giant, and you still talk about your mom like she is one. But the image that you always held onto of your dad has been sullied. And now you're like, oh, he's kind of a fuck boy. Ugh. And that hurts. And you're having to accept that your dad is just another man. He's human. And worse than human, a man. And he's feeling like he's trying to get something back. He's trying to get a piece of his youth back. Or he was unhappy with your mom for a while. Or like you said, they weren't a good match. And then they divorced and he wants to come back with a bang, and this is his big dick, this 39-year-old woman younger than Beyonce. This is your dad's version of the big dick. It's giving him the best sex of his life now, you know? And I think this could just be a phase for both of them. And in the same way that you're happy for your mom's steamy situationship, I think it's okay to look kindly upon what your dad's doing and go, all right, well, he's just doing this for a while. And it'd be worse. I mean, maybe you'd be happier if your dad found a 50-year-old man with a big dick. But our parents aren't perfect, and they're not always going to be held in high esteem like we had them when we were children, and you're going to find their flaws. And I think it's okay to just say that to your dad. I hope you've said that to him already. It sounds like in your family you have this kind of relationship where you can go, do you know what it is, Dad? I admired Mom so much, and I hoped that when you moved on, you would be with a woman that I admired as much, because I admired you. And now that you're with a 39-year-old, I know she's not 12, but it makes me think less of you. And that's what makes me sad, because I love thinking highly of you, Dad. And I think this is not good enough for you. It's a bit beneath you. If you talk to him like that, instead of like, you're gross, you know, she's young. It's like, I get that you love her. You think you love her now and you met her at work, whatever, but like, you were a dick and that hurt me. And I thought that you could get a woman your own age. And now I think maybe you don't want a woman your own age. And that makes me feel like you don't value Mom the way I do, and you won't value me when I'm older. And it makes me think you're like a every run-of-the-mill kind of man, and I never thought of you that way, Dad. And then he'll be like, oh, fuck. He wants to be idolized by you too. And then just say, for my own self-preservation, now that I've explained myself, don't take it the wrong way, I don't want to be around this girlfriend. I'm an adult. I don't want to be around her. And then if he is the good dad that you remember him being, he will make special time just for you. But at the end of the day, who cares? Like, you're funny and you're grown, and I like you a lot. That is all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Telling Everybody Everything. My tour is available. Well, some venues are sold out already, which is a shock. The tour sold like 50,000 tickets over the weekend. So, I mean, I really appreciate that people are excited to see me back on stage. And I'm excited to get back on stage with my brand new show. So if you were putting off getting tickets, go to your local Live Nation site now, whatever country you live in, and see if you can find some. I'm coming to a town near you. We're going to add a few shows, I think, in Bristol and Manchester at the very least. Maybe a few in Ireland. So look out for those. Thanks once again for listening. Please look after each other. I am on Rosie Jones' new show, Out of Order, every Monday night at 9 p.m. on Comedy Central. My book, The Audacity, is always available for you. And you don't have to spend money on me. Just listen to this podcast for free. Share it and tell your friends. Love ya.